on radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Darren Mara. Coming up, fears of more violence on Manus Island.
Australia has fallen a long, long way in terms of our human rights record.
Also coming up tonight...
I get bloody emotional about it, I'm afraid. Yeah, different people. They were so close. They were mates.
Commemorations marking the centenary of the Battle of Bathsheba.
And we'll have a wrap of the weekend in sport.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Darren Mara. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is travelling to Israel, where he'll attend commemorations for the centenary of the Battle of Bathsheba. The trip had been delayed as a result of the High Court citizenship fallout, with a number of planned meetings and events either cancelled or postponed. Mr Turnbull will meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, with defence and security expected to be a key focus of discussions. Opposition leader Bill Shorten is also in Israel, where he has accused Malcolm Turnbull of causing chaos in Australia's Parliament. He's blasted Mr Turnbull for not standing Barnaby Joyce down as Deputy Prime Minister during the High Court case into his eligibility for Parliament.
Turnbull's too arrogant for that, and because of his arrogance and his poor judgment, we've now got the current turmoil. So if there's domestic issues in Australia, they rest 100% at the feet of the poor judgment of our current Prime Minister.
Papua New Guinea is demanding Australia clarifies what will happen to hundreds of men when the Manus Island Detention Centre closes on Tuesday. PNG Immigration Minister Petrus Thomas says Australia is responsible for people found not to be refugees, as well as refugees who are refusing to settle on Manus Island. In a statement, he's called for Australia's support in dealing with the remaining caseload and raised concerns over human rights and the reduction of health services for detainees on Manus Island. Australia was responsible for finding third country resettlement options for refugees and working with respective governments of non-refugees to facilitate their returns. Acting Prime Minister Julie Bishop says the government is continuing to work on finding solutions.
We are working with PNG to ensure that those who are found to be refugees can be resettled either in PNG or in other countries. And we have a number of negotiations underway, including, as you know, with the United States. Those who have found not to be refugees should go home. They've been found by the UNHCR not to be owed protection, so they should return to their homes.
Labor has encouraged people to apply for Australian citizenship after the government's proposed changes to citizenship laws were blocked by the Senate. Changes included extending the waiting time for permanent residents to apply for citizenship and tougher English language tests, along with extra powers for the Immigration Minister. The Department of Immigration says it's received a rush of applications for citizenship in the wake of the failed changes. Labor MP Tony Burke has told SBS's Arabic 24 program prospective citizens shouldn't waste any time.
Anyone who is eligible now and wants to be an Australian citizen should apply now, because the government will try again, and you can never guarantee with the Senate that you win every time. But right now we've got a reprieve. Right now the government has given up and they're processing again. They'll come back, but anyone who is eligible now should apply now.
West Indies cricketer Chris Gayle has won his defamation case against Fairfax Media, which claimed in articles that he exposed himself to a female massage therapist. The incident was alleged to have occurred in the dressing room during a Sydney training session at the 2015 World Cup. Mr. Gayle says he's glad the case is over.
And I'm glad the public actually get the chance to actually read into things and, you know, can hear what actually transpired in the courtroom as well. But at the end of the day, you know, it actually revealed itself. And, you know, like I said, I'm very thankful. I will just carry on with my normal life and just get back on the field.
In a statement, Fairfax Media says it doesn't believe the organisation got a fair trial, with the judge deciding not to order a new trial. This is despite the judge agreeing the jury had been prejudiced against the media organisation. And finally, Iraqi Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani says he'll resign as president on Wednesday after an independence referendum he led backfired. In his first address since Iraqi forces launched an offensive to recapture Kurdish-held territory, Mr. Barzani has vigorously defended his decision to hold the referendum. He's also criticised the United States for letting tanks supplied to Iraqi forces for the battle against IS to be used against the Kurds. Mr. Barzani says the Iraqi offensive and the government's refusal of any dialogue vindicate his view that Iraq's government no longer believes in Kurdish rights.
The Kurdish independence referendum was meant to find peaceful solutions to problems with the Iraqi government. We told them that we are ready to enter into dialogue and put off independence for 2 or 3 years to find a solution to the problems with Baghdad.
And now a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, sunny and 28. Adelaide, cloud clearing 20. Melbourne, a shower or two, 16. Hobart, partly cloudy, 18 degrees. Canberra, similar conditions at 19. Wollongong, a possible shower, 19. Sydney, partly cloudy, a chance of a shower, 21. Newcastle, shower or two, 19. Brisbane, mostly sunny, warm and 28. Cairns, a possible late shower, 32. Darwin, a shower or two with a possible storm, 34 degrees. Greg Moore on those stories in SBS World News at 6:30.
Thanks, Darren. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. The former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce is dismissing potential threats to decisions he made while he was in Parliament. The opposition claims more than 100 government decisions could face a legal challenge because they were made by two Nationals politicians who were ineligible to be in Parliament because of their dual citizenship. The Foreign Minister has also moved to calm tensions between the Liberals and the Nationals following the High Court decision. Here's Miles Morgan.
The Prime Minister was forced to delay his trip to Israel to commemorate the Battle of Beersheba because of the High Court decision, which disqualified his Deputy Prime Minister. But there were no delays for the opposition leader Bill Shorten, who has made the trip to Jerusalem. Mr. Shorten says the Prime Minister can only blame himself as the government tries to secure its narrow hold on power.
All of this current turmoil and chaos in the Australian government and the Australian Parliament could have been avoided if Turnbull had simply stood Joyce aside until the High Court had made its decision. But Turnbull's too arrogant for that.
Nationals leader Barnaby Joyce and Deputy Leader Fiona Nash were both disqualified from Parliament last week by the High Court because of their dual citizenships. It forced the government to call a by-election in Mr. Joyce's New England electorate in northern New South Wales, which, having renounced his New Zealand citizenship, he is contesting and expected to win. But in the meantime, the opposition has sought legal advice about the validity of decisions Mr. Joyce and Ms. Nash made while in office. Acting opposition leader Tanya Plibersek told the ABC Labor isn't encouraging people to take legal action, but she won't be surprised if they do.
If they want to pursue the government on some of them, I don't doubt they will. I mean, there's all sorts of grants and appointments made by these ministers, decisions made under the Water Act. Barnaby Joyce had significant power to determine claims for payments to water access entitlement holders. There would be a range of areas where people would be considering whether they had received fair treatment from these ministers.
According to the advice Labor received, any decision made by the pair after October 20th last year may be open to legal challenge. It means Mr. Joyce's decision to relocate a large government department from Canberra to his regional electorate, as well as elements of the national broadband network rollout and government appointments, could be vulnerable. But the acting Prime Minister, Julie Bishop, says it's business as usual for the government.
It's a collective decision-making process. Cabinet has made the majority of the decisions. Appointments, for example, are made by the Governor-General and Executive Council. They're signed off by the Governor-General on advice from the Cabinet. There may be a few decisions. The Attorney-General has said that we'll look at those, but the vast majority of decisions are made by Cabinet.
Mr. Joyce is also confident any challenge would survive legal scrutiny. But now, on the campaign trail, the former Deputy Prime Minister and Nationals leader reminded the Liberals that his party played a major role in the Coalition's 2016 election victory.
We're a coalition, and without the National Party, there'd be no government. That's a statement of fact. I think I've had my piece, I've said it, and I've stayed the bleeding obvious that without a coalition, without the National Party vote, there would be no government.
Julie Bishop says her elevation to acting Prime Minister instead of a National is not a sign of tension between the two parties.
It's a question of precedence, and in terms of seniority, I'm the most senior member of the Cabinet after the Prime Minister and Barnaby Joyce. We're a coalition. We're a political family. We're the most powerful political momentum in Australian history. And so we are stronger together, and that's why we're working closely as a coalition. There'll be issues from time to time, but like any family, you get over them and you move on.
The by-election for Barnaby Joyce's seat is on December the 2nd. He won the seat comfortably last year, and the government is confident he'll do it again.
Miles Morgan in Canberra. 11 past 6. Coming up on the show, commemorations marking the centenary of the Battle of Bathsheba.
Hand-to-hand battle in the trenches. It was a bloody affair, but it was a brave affair, that it should be the cornerstone of the Australian identity, replacing Gallipoli. Gallipoli was a British-led defeat.
You're listening to SBS World News Radio with Greg Dyett. 13 past 6. Tensions are high on Manus Island, with refugee advocates fearing there could be a loss of life when Australia's immigration centre closes tomorrow. Papua New Guinea wants Australia to clarify what will happen to hundreds of men who are refusing to leave the centre, citing fears for their safety. This report from Andrea Nierhoff.
Drinking water has been cut off and food rations are being handed out as hundreds of men prepare to stay in the centre on Manus Island amid fears for their safety. The centre is closing following a decision by Papua New Guinea's highest court in April last year, which found detention of refugees and asylum seekers was illegal and unconstitutional. Papua New Guinea's police commissioner last week warned the safety of refugees and workers at the Australian-run Manus Island Regional Processing Centre is not to be taken for granted as authorities prepare to shut it down. Commissioner Barkey's statement said police would assist the Immigration Department to move 551 genuine refugees and 167 non-genuine refugees to transit camps near the island's main town of Lorengau. A statement from PNG's Immigration Minister Petrus Thomas holds Australia responsible for any of them found not to be refugees, as well as for the refugees who are refusing to settle on Manus Island until the last of the detainees is resettled.
PNG has no obligation under the current arrangement to deal with these two cohorts, and they remain the responsibility of Australia to pursue third country options and liaise with the respective governments of the non-refugees for their voluntary or involuntary return.
Mr. Thomas has also raised concerns over human rights and the reduction of health services for detainees on Manus Island. PNG is also concerned about a company that has a contract to operate three facilities designed to house refugees once Manus is closed. Mr. Thomas's statement refers to reports Paladin Solutions has hired former police and soldiers from Fiji.
This arrangement is done without any consultation with the PNG Immigration and Citizenship Service Authority to consider concerns of local security service providers and the Manus provincial government.
Acting Prime Minister Julie Bishop says the government is continuing to work to find solutions.
We are working with PNG to ensure that those who are found to be refugees can be resettled either in PNG or in other countries. And we have a number of negotiations underway, including, as you know, with the United States. Those who have found not to be refugees should go home. They've been found by the UNHCR not to be owed protection, so they should return to their homes.
While there is a UNHCR team on Manus now to observe the closure, the detainees were assessed under the PNG's obligations as signatory to the UN Refugee Convention in a process managed by Australia. Their claims have not been assessed by the UNHCR. Refugee advocates fear there will be violence. Ian Rintoul from the Refugee Action Coalition says Australia has the power to prevent bloodshed.
Whether there's violence or not will depend entirely on whether the Australian Border Force approves the use of PNG police against the detainees. So the question of whether there is going to be violence is entirely at the feet of the Australian government. There's no indication that there's going to be any violence from anyone inside the detention centre. I think there have been already threats, though, from some locals of violence against the detention centre itself. I mean, this is why the situation is extremely tense.
Green Senator Nick McKim is currently on Manus Island.
There are a very large number of Australians who regard both Labor and Liberal as quite rightfully equally culpable in the human rights abuses that have been faced not only by the guys on Manus Island, but the men, women and children on Nauru as well. And Australia has fallen a long, long way in terms of our human rights record.
Green Senator Nick McKim speaking there from Manus Island. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has left for Israel to attend the centenary of the Battle of Beersheba. The Australian assault on the Palestinian town is viewed as our most significant victory of the war. While in Israel, Mr. Turnbull will also meet with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As Peggy Giacomelis reports, defence and security are expected to be a key focus of discussions.
That's from the 1940 movie 40,000 Horsemen, depicting the Battle of Beersheba that took place on the afternoon of October the 31st, 1917. Through machine gun and rifle fire, 800 men with the Australian Light Horse charged into Turkish defences around the Palestinian town. They seized the town and within 2 hours captured more than 700 Ottoman troops, an Anzac victory that changed the course of history. Lieutenant Colonel Hamish Gibbons is with the New Zealand Army and is in Israel for the anniversary.
And so by the time the charge went in, you know, definitely the morale of the troops wouldn't have been great. And in fact, they were already starting to thin out. They knew that the battle was lost and they were starting to think, I just need to save myself and get out. Charger would have been a fearsome sight, especially given that they would have expected them to stop, get off their horses and approach on foot. But they just kept coming and coming and yeah, I can't imagine what that would have been like.
The Battle of Beersheba took place in the final stage of the war and was mounted to seize back the city from Ottoman rule. At the cost of 31 dead and 36 wounded, the 800 horsemen had faced down machine gun fire and wrested an unlikely victory, a bright spot in the third year of Australia's involvement in the Great War. The battle is considered instrumental in helping to break Turkish lines, contributing to the eventual fall of the Ottoman Empire.
I get bloody emotional about it, I'm afraid.
Can't help it, but that, yeah, different people. They were so close, they were mates.
Brian Cantwell's father, Bluey, was in the first wave of six to jump the Turkish trenches.
They flew so far over the trenches that the German officer saved his own skin and he offered his pistol to Dad as a token of surrender.
For Australia, 1917 was by far the worst year of the Great War. A third of all Australians who died during World War I perished that year. That's around 21,000 people. October was the worst single month with more than 6,000 dead. So a success delivered by the Australians in that same October produced jubilation. Jonathan King is a military historian and author.
Hand-to-hand battle in the trenches. It was a bloody affair, but it was a brave affair, that it should be the cornerstone of the Australian identity, replacing Gallipoli. Gallipoli was a British-led defeat.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and opposition leader Bill Shorten will be in Beersheba to mark the centenary. A day of commemorations in Israel will culminate with an enactment of the charge. There will also be a number of events held around Australia.
Peggy Giacomelis with that story. Now, students speaking Mandarin, Greek, Swedish and Polish have won the top spots in the SBS National Language Competition. Thousands of entries were received from across Australia in the competition aimed at inspiring young people to embrace language learning. Natasha Kallios reports.
The SBS National Language Competition 2017 asked students a simple question. What does language learning mean to you? Entrants from across the country submitted short videos in languages other than English. Some students said it made them feel closer to their families, while others said it was just fun to expand their skills. Percy Page won the junior primary division for his entry, where he spoke about what learning Mandarin means to him. The nationwide competition aims to encourage school children and asks them to reflect on the cultural, linguistic and ethnic diversity of Australia's multicultural society. At an official presentation ceremony in Sydney, Percy Page told SBS in English about his entry and his passion.
I did about talking
Mandarin.
Yeah, Mandarin.
What do you like about talking Mandarin?
That I like the sound of the words and also the pronunciation.
What did you say when you found out that you'd won?
Irini Vagaki won in the primary school division of the competition. In her entry, she talked about the language she adores, Greek, and why it is unique.
I'm going to tell you a song, a story, because the language that I love is only one. Mother, it has given birth to many others. Mother to languages small and big. The Greek language passes the boundaries. I love it so much, it never forgets me. Its words never end. It fills anyone's empty hug. So beautiful, special, unique. The language that I adore is Greek.
Education Minister Simon Birmingham says the SBS language competition provides an important community service. Mr. Birmingham says any initiative that promotes language learning in Australia is valuable.
It's a wonderful celebration of learning language and hopefully something that inspires other young people to try to learn languages, encourages parents to keep their kids or engage their children in learning language, and of course encourages schools and our education system to keep looking for ways to offer language opportunities to young Australians.
In her winning entry for ages 13 to 15, Anjali Dakuna talked of how speaking Swedish makes her feel like a superhero.
Svenska ger mig superkrafter. Jag kan kommunicera med andra, lära om min kultur.
She says she found out she had won while she was on a school bus and was thrilled to find her creative efforts rewarded.
I think it's really important that people are keeping up the languages, and in schools now there are a lot of language programs, and encouraging it in such a big media platform is really important.
The winner of the senior high school category, Selena Bogara, is a Polish speaker. She used her entry to talk about the benefits of being bilingual.
My favourite singer is Polish, and I understand her. It means I can talk with my grandmother. Hi, grandmother. Understand? It means I can be an interpreter.
Miss Bagara says other students should consider showcasing their language talents and sharing them with the community.
It means that I can talk to my family because my grandparents, they don't speak any English, so that's the communication, speaking Polish and just part of my culture, really. I think it's really important. I think it's really important to be in touch with your culture and all those things.
The four grand prize winners each receive an iPad Pro and a full day's pass to Luna Park in Sydney for two people.
Natasha Kelios with that story. Well, it's been a weekend to celebrate in sport with football, rugby league and basketball. The details, here's Sunila Wasti.
In football, we're now 4 weeks into the A-League season and one team is standing tall above the rest. Melbourne City is top of the table with 4 wins from their 4 games. Their latest, a 2-0 win over Adelaide United in Adelaide. In form import, Ross McCormack scored both goals inside the first 20 minutes. But City had to survive the final half an hour or so with only 10 men after Osama Malik received his second yellow card. City coach Warren Joyce, full of praise for the man at the heart of City not conceding a goal, veteran goalkeeper Eugene Galekovic.
He's a good person, he's a good pro. You know, he's a leader, the way he conducts himself every day. You know, he's good to work with. You want people like that in your club, and you want all the young players at the football club to end up like that.
What you don't want to end up like is the Wellington Phoenix this past weekend. They looked destined for victory, leading Brisbane Roar 3-0 after just 20 minutes. But the lead didn't hold, and two goals from marquee striker Massimo Macarone helped give the Roar a 3-all draw and their first competition point of the season, leaving Wellington, like them, still winless. There were some big winners on the first weekend of the Rugby League World Cup. Amongst the results were Fiji thrashing the United States, Lebanon winning against France, Ireland defeating Italy, New Zealand beating Samoa, and Papua New Guinea delighting their home fans in a country where rugby league borders on religious status by belting Wales 50-6. 10-time world champions Australia were also winners, defeating fellow heavyweights England, but by the relatively sedate scoreline of 18-4. Australian captain Cameron Smith says the side is playing down the high expectations that follow them into the tournament.
You know, the talk about us being red-hot favourites and it was clear-cut sort of victory for the Kangaroos tonight. You know, we never thought that at all.
In basketball, the Brisbane Bullets survived being outscored by 14 in the final quarter to defeat Melbourne United 87-85. Melbourne coach Dean Vickerman says his side has to stop creating a problem for itself by playing poorly immediately after half time.
Our third quarter has been a problem for us the last three games. You know, we've lost double figures in that quarter in three games and then put ourselves, you know, behind it and playing catch-up basketball, and you know, you can't continue to have repeat problems like that. And you know, I've got to change as a coach to make sure, you know, we do something different in that third quarter.
The beleaguered Sydney Kings also had success, defeating fellow strugglers the Illawarra Hawks 99-94 in overtime.
Sunila Wasti with that look at sport. Time to check the news headlines now. And the government's chief medical officer has rejected claims that a cheap vaccine was used to protect Australians against the flu this season. Hundreds of thousands of people have demonstrated against independence in Barcelona just days after Spain sacked the Catalan president, Carles Puigdemont, and took control of the region. At least five people have been killed in storms that have battered northern and central Europe, which knocked out power and interrupted rail traffic across the region. And here, the West Indies cricketer Chris Gayle has won his defamation case against Fairfax Media, which claimed in newspaper articles that he exposed himself to a female massage therapist. A New South Wales Supreme Court jury has found that Fairfax had not established that the claims were substantially true. The incident was alleged to have occurred in the West Indies dressing room during a Sydney training session at the 2015 World Cup. Speaking outside the court, Gayle says that he's glad the case is over. It may not be over, though, as Fairfax Media has released a statement hinting that an appeal could be in the works. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Janice Peterson bringing you SBS World News right across Australia from 6:30. You can find our content on our website at sbs.com.au/news. You can also live stream the bulletin on our website. Also, you can get our content in your Facebook news feed by liking our page, SBS World News. We're also on Twitter, our Twitter handle at SBS News. I'm Greg Diet. Thanks for listening.